بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. When we are in the company of the pious, then we feel motivated. We see a drive within us, an urge to do things. Whereas we would not experience that type of feelings. And when we get into the company of a pious, righteous person, then we feel motivated. So this motivation is not one's personal achievement, rather it is the strength of the environment that has impacted on the individual. And the proof of it is, the moment you get out of this environment, now you don't feel the type of motivation that you used to experience. Whilst you're around, you find that urge, you find a motivation. Sometimes you want to get into zikr, sometimes into nafil namaz, sometimes into the recitation of the Quran Sharif, sometimes you want to make mutala of some kitab. So all this happens when you are in that environment. And as long as you are in that environment, that feelings remain, and then you move out of that environment, everything collapses. So this type of a feeling is called nisbat. But this is the entry level of nisbat. It's the beginning, it's the entry level. Really, you haven't achieved much. It is just the environment that has affected you. Like you are in the shop of a perfumer, so you will feel this perfume all around you. You look above, you get some perfume on the right, on the left, behind, in front, you get the fragrance of some perfume. So person gets mistaken in thinking that, no, I have got a lot of perfume. But the moment he leaves that perfumer, goes out, everything is gone. So that perfume that he was enjoying was on account of the environment. He's in the environment, he enjoys it. Out of the environment, then the thing is gone. It's no more with him. People that are used to address our environment, they will also bear testimony to this fact. When they are in the madrasa environment, then they can do a lot of work. They're making mutala, they're doing their work, Quran Sharif, recitation, tahajjud, namaz on time. Then, when you go home, then you can't even do quarter of what you were doing in the madrasa. So, this what you were doing was not of your own. It was on account of that madrasa environment. There was some pious person there, whoever it was. And his ikhlas and his sincerity was carrying you through. Then when you left the environment, everything went. So this type of a nisbat is the entry level. So one cannot be complacent with this type of a nisbat, with this type of a relationship, this type of a connection. He needs to move on, he needs to progress, he needs to move on. He can't remain at that level. Generally, this nisbat and this relationship, it strengthens after a long period, long association with your elders. When you have that association after a long period, then Allah Ta'ala blesses other individuals also with that same type of feeling. Hazrat Mawlana Muhammad Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullahi and Mawlana Raipuri both had come to Sahanpur, both had met. And it was some differences of the ulama-i-kiram that were carrying on at the time, the league and the congress differences. And you know, when we have differences, the differences spills out into the public, then everybody has his 2 cents to give. Whether it is a learned person, whether it is not a learned person, everybody is giving his 2 cents. And everybody wants to feel important, everybody wants to feel that he is also educated, he can also add something to this. And then he will say, and he will think within himself, that they're going wrong because they're not listening to me. If they listened to me, they only heard me out, then I would have found a very nice plan for them. But these people, well, what can we do about them? So each person thinks about himself in that way. So these differences were carrying on. And it is important when these differences do occur amongst ulama kiram, then how do you conduct yourself? Allama Ibn Abdul Barr, rahmatullah alayh, he's got one kitab, Jami'ul Ilm, the adab, respect, etc. And he's mentioned certain very pertinent and very important laws pertaining to ikhtilaf and pertaining to differences amongst the ulama kiram. He says, لَا يَزَالُ أَهْلُ الْفَتْوَى يُفْتُونَ فَيُحِلُّونَ وَيُحَرِّمُونَ. You always had this. This situation you had always. So Allama Ibn Abdul Barr is around the 4th century and he's a Maliki alim, very great faqih, very great muhaddis, and also in the line of tazkiyah he had made great strides. He had written a sharah on the Muwatta, approximately 70 volumes, Kitab al-Tamheed, approximately 70 volumes. He was in Spain. In Spain, there were two, three places that were known as ilmi circles. One was known as Cordoba, now they call it Cordova. And there was another place also in Spain that was quite popular, quite famous for its ulama, etc. So, he has written in this kitab the adab and the type of etiquette that you need to have when there are differences amongst ulama-i kiram. So he says that people of fatwa, they always do issue fatwas. Someone is issuing this to be halal, that to be haram, this to be halal, this to be haram. And sometimes within that issuing of fatwa, one is contradicting the other. This person says that this is halal, and the other alim says that no, this is not halal. So one is saying halal, and the other is saying haram. With all that, down the generations, when you look at these ulama-i kiram, and these mashayikh, great, great people, he's talking about the 3rd and the 4th century, the one that passed the fatwa of haram did not regard that person who had passed the fatwa of halal to be misled on account of his fatwa. And vice versa, the other way around as well, the one who had issued a fatwa of halal, he didn't consider that person to be astray for him issuing this type of a fatwa. So both respected each other and both stuck to their opinions. You have an opinion, you stick to that opinion. He has an opinion, he stuck to his opinion. Because of the opinion you have taken up for yourself, you didn't consider that alim to be of the cause and astray. And because of the opinion he's taken, you don't think him to be of the cause and astray. Provided they are senior alim, people of taqwa, righteousness, etc. They have all these things. The most you can say that they have made a mistake. That's the furthest you can say. You can't say with absolute certainty that I am right only. Right is just confined to what I say. You can't say that. Because they are people of ilm and taqwa on both ends. When they are people of ilm and taqwa on both ends, then you cannot say that the truth is just confined to what I say. As Mu'ad Thani Sahib Rahmatullah says, that sometimes a person has a bad death, and the reason for the bad death is that he considered zanni issues that were not qat'i, not categorical, he considers them to be categorical. It's a masla and it's not categorical, there's some ambiguity in it, right? Now in spite of the nature of that masla or that hadith, you gave it the status of a categorical hadith. So you consider it to be clear cut, absolutely clear. If anybody goes against it, then you consider him to be astray. So one is that level of hadith, and then you get another level of hadith, but it's not absolutely categorical. It's not absolutely clear in its message. So when you get that level of hadith or that level of masla, and you count that to be categorical, absolutely clear, then sometimes this type of a belief leads to a bad death. And how does it happen? He says, when the time of death approaches, then shaitan shows you the whole masla, and he convinces you that this masla was not categorical. It was not clear cut. Right? Whereas all your life you had believed it to be categorical. What he makes you understand? He makes you understand, he shows it to you, that this masla was not absolutely clear cut. It wasn't categorical, right? And all your life, what you had been believing, you had been entertaining the belief that this was categorical. So this is the entire life belief. Now when you see that towards the end of your life, then you begin to have doubt about all the other maslas that you knew. You begin to entertain doubts in all the other hadiths that you had come across. I thought this to be also categorical, and this to be categorical, this to be categorical. Now, I don't know whether it's got the same type of import or not. It is on the same level or not. So now, things that are categorical, you will begin to doubt in them. Things that are not categorical, you will begin to doubt in them. Your iman will be very easily plunged and looted by shaitan at that time. So the right thing is, when you come across such a situation where there is a difference of opinion amongst the ulama-i-kiram, then you stick to your opinion. But you keep the possibility, have that in your mind, that possibly the other person is also saying the truth. Provided, as I say, they are people of taqwa, people of virtue, people of righteousness, you will feel that what you think is right, but there is a possibility that your opposition is saying the right. And he will think the same about you. Like you have a difference in the imams. Imam Shafi'i rahmatullah alayh is saying that when you leave out saying Bismillah at the time of slaughtering, then that animal is still halal, right? If someone left out Bismillah at the time of the slaughtering, then he will consider that to be halal, permissible. And we will say, no, if you left it out deliberately, then that will not be halal. So Imam Shafi'i rahmatullah will say it's permissible and it's halal, and we will say it's haram, right? But you haven't heard any Hanafi saying that na'uzubillah, Imam Shafi'i rahmatullah went astray because of passing this type of a fatwa. You won't hear any Hanafi saying this. You will still respect Imam Shafi'i rahmatullah, and you will still say rahmatullah, you will still say Imam, you will still use the titles of respect for him. You will not say that he's gone astray, he's gone off the course. You will not say that. So the same type of respect you will afford to him. Now here, this is a point, this is a tragedy, where we formulate an opinion about a certain issue, and then we confine it to what we feel. We confine it to what we feel, what we say that is right. So if there's anybody that is speaking against us, then we want to bulldoze him, we want to demolish him, we want to disgrace him, we want to run him down. Now that's not the way of an alim. Forget the public, even an alim is not supposed to be behaving in that way. You say your bit, and leave it to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And what he has to say, he will say is, and he'll leave it to Allah ta'ala. But you go that extra mile and demolish the person that is against you, that's not right. Allah Pak didn't ask you to do that. And neither was this the way of your predecessors. They said what they had to say, they presented it, and then they carried on. You don't see in Imam Shafi'i rahmatullah's kitab that wherever he's writing a masla and he's got a difference with other imams, so they all went astray, they all batil, and they all astray. You won't find that happening. Nor will you find in the kitabs of Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal rahmatullah that wherever he will say that this is the fatwa, this is the masla. And if anybody says something against this, then he is totally off the course, he is astray, he's haram and he's batil, he's kumra. He won't say that. So this is what Imam Allama Ibn Abdul Barr, what he says. This person doesn't declare that person as a kafir or astray because of he is taking that opinion, and nor that person considers this person to be astray because of him holding on to that opinion. So when there is that room, had Allah Ta'ala wanted, Allah Ta'ala could have used such words where there would have been no difference of opinion. Could have used that. Doesn't he have the power to do it? There are certain things where there is absolute categorical import in certain ahkam. Like you say, Zuhar got 4 rakats of farz. Don't you say that? So there are certain things where there is laws that are absolutely categorical. There is no room for any type of interpretation. It's absolutely clear. So Allah Ta'ala could have given all the laws like that. But he didn't give all the laws like that. Some laws he made totally clear, and some laws were not absolutely clear. He had the power to do it, but he didn't do it. When he didn't do it, so it shows that he wants that there should be some type of difference of opinion. Why he wants that difference of opinion? Now Allah knows better why he wants that type of a difference of opinion. The obvious reason that comes to our mind is that if there had been no differences of opinion, it was straight and clear, then the mujtahid would have not got that additional sawab. Now, here, when the masla is not absolutely clear, you're using your mind, you're trying, you are investigating. And after some time, after some investigation, difficulty and pains, you come to a conclusion. So, for this difficulty, for the pain and the struggle that you went through, you're getting an additional reward. Right? So Allah Ta'ala left certain areas not to be very clear, so that you could use your discretion, use your mental faculties, and arrive to certain conclusions. So that when you use that, you are deserving one additional reward. So anyway, what we are getting at, these differences were carrying on, very, very severe differences that were carrying on in India at the time. Some people were on the side of the League, some people were on the side of the Congress, and these differences were carrying on. And in all that differences, then people were labeling each other. You know, he's off, he's an English agent, or he's a Hindu agent, or he's got some own personal agenda. He's got some agenda of his. So people, you can't control their tongues. And they feel they are free to say what they need to say. You can't control them. People are labeling. You've taken this opinion, so you're called an English agent because it seems to be conforming with the English desire. And you're taking a contrary opinion, then they say, no, you're a Hindu agent. See? It's a bad statement to make, to label someone a British or a Christian or a Hindu. That's not a right statement to make. You have the difference that you feel that this opinion is not right. You are entitled to do that. But to give a title to someone, that you don't have that right. So you live within, you stay within your parameter, you got no problem. But you go that extra beyond the parameter, now you're causing a problem. You have got the right to choose an opinion. But to label someone, you don't have that right. To entertain doubts and suspicions about that person, you don't have that right. Yes, so you do what you are allowed to, not what you aren't allowed to. Okay. So anyway, these differences were carrying on in India, and these mashayikh and these buzurgan ad-din, they had all been gathered here in Saharanpur. This differences was the topic that they were discussing. So as Muhammad Ilyas Sahib rahmatullahi, he says, there is no shortage of blessings, whether it be Muhammad Thanvi Sahib rahmatullahi or Muhammad Madani Sahib rahmatullahi. Both have got conflicting opinions, but by both's presence there is no shortage of any blessing. There's blessings in abundance here, and there's blessings in abundance there as well. But Mu'tariz yaha se bhi mahroom or waha se bhi mahroom. But the one that criticizes, he runs down, he criticizes and he runs down, then he is deprived on this end and he is deprived on that end. From the blessings here he is deprived, and his blessings of the, he is deprived of the blessings on that end as well. Because he's taken up a business of criticism. That's what he wants to do. He wants to run down, criticize, label people, demolish them. So now he is deprived of the blessings on this end and as well as on that end. Both sides he's deprived himself. See, the whole problem starts off at this point where we don't wish to live within our parameters. We live within our parameters, there's no problem. But we go beyond the parameters, and then we formulate an opinion of a person, and label people, there you're going off. So, he's deprived here, and he's deprived here. Both ways he's lost out. He thinks that he's done a great thing by investigating this thing here, and thereafter labeling someone to be a British, labeling someone to be a Hindu. He feels he's done a great khidmat, a great service. But he doesn't realize that he has lost himself. He's lost out completely. So Mawla says that there is no shortage of blessings here, no shortage of blessings there. But the one that criticizes and runs down, he is deprived on both ends. Both ends, he lost out here, he lost out there. Both ways, he is lost out. And thereafter he went on to say, Rai Puri Sahib Rahmatullah began to say that really we don't have the type of adab that is required for the mashayikh, the type of adab, the type of respect, the type of etiquette that we need to show and display. We don't have that. Otherwise, my heart desires that I go and spend some time with Rahmatullah Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. See? But now, we may go there, we do not know the type of adab that is required, the type of etiquette that is required. And instead of being a comfort to Mawlana, we will become a cause of pain to him. So therefore this is what is stopping me from going up there, because we don't know the type of etiquette. We don't know the type of etiquette. Sometimes I think, whilst I'm in namaz, you know, we think that we are in namaz and we're doing a great service, right? We don't look at it the other way around, that it is just a consideration of Allah Ta'ala that is allowing us to continue in namaz. Whereas we may be doing a mess up with it. You know, like our small child, and he comes and serves his father, right? So, he's pressing his father's hand. Father doesn't like his service, because he doesn't know how to press. He's causing pain. Father doesn't like his service, right? Because he doesn't know how to do it. He's making a mess up. But the father is also considerate that if I tell him, no, don't do it, so he'll feel hurt about it. So just out of consideration for the child, the father is overlooking, no, carry on, do it. So he's thinking, I'm doing so much of work. What the child feels, I'm doing so much of work. And he doesn't realize that the father is just allowing this to happen out of consideration. So this is the nature of our service. The service that we offer to Allah Ta'ala, this is the nature that we don't do it correctly. We're not doing it how it's supposed to be doing, according to His sublime majesty, greatness, grandeur. We're not doing it at that level. We're not doing it. We can't do it. But then it is the consideration, the love, the compassion of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He tolerates and He overlooks. No mind, He's trying. Let Him carry on. Though it's a broken effort, though it isn't really a good effort, but He's trying, so let Him carry on. So that's the generosity and the magnanimity of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that in spite of your broken effort, your effort is totally worth rejection. But the fact that you are trying, He is entertaining you, He is accepting you, He is acknowledging you, just because of your trying. So you mustn't be in that misconcept of thinking, no, AC, I'm doing such a great service, I'm doing my namaz, I'm doing this, whatever. So you need to look at it from the other way, that I'm not doing it right. Look at the generosity, the grandeur, the magnanimity of Allah Ta'ala, that in spite of all this being broken, He's still answering, He's still accepting, He's still showing love and affection, and He's still showing that type of compassion towards me. Sometimes the wrongs take place in us, because we look at things from one dimension. one dimension. The thing that we think, we just look at it from that dimension, we're not prepared to look at a situation from the other dimension. So, like someone is making zikr loudly in the masjid, right? So he's looking at it from one single dimension, saying, I'm making zikr, zikr is ibadat, and zikr has to be done. So he's looking at it from one dimension. Now it may be that it is namaz time. Because it is namaz time, the next person is being disturbed. Right? Now, in his mind, what he thinks that he is doing a great piece of job. But really, what is he doing? He's hurting the next person. So because he's looking at it from just one single dimension, therefore he's caused a problem. He didn't open his mind, he didn't open his faculties of thinking broadly. Therefore, he's brought a problem upon himself. He's just thought from one angle, and because he's thought from a single angle, he confined his thought to that point there. Therefore, he's brought this type of a situation upon himself. So when you look at it broadly, then you understand things in perspective, right? Man has got an addiction, smoking, right? He's got an addiction of smoking. So he says, no, it's my personal prerogative, I can smoke, what's wrong with smoking? It's my personal prerogative. Now you are a married man, and you smoke, right? Obviously, when you are a married person, you're going to be intimate. You're going to be intimate with your spouse. When you're going to be intimate with your spouse, then she's going to get that type of smell. And she cannot say, because she's a woman, she cannot say. Now imagine someone's mouth is stinking, really stinking, there's a stench coming out of the mouth, and he's putting his mouth onto your mouth. How you feel? You feel nauseous, you feel very dirty, very upset about it. Right? So you're thinking in one direction, that one direction, one dimension thought, one single dimensional thought is bringing about this type of a perplexity, bringing about this type of a confusion. Why is brought this confusion? Because you thought just one way. You didn't think how she will feel it, how she will take it. And you only consider that, alright, how she's thinking about it, how will she take it. Then you may have dumped and abandoned your habit of smoking, because in spite of you brushing your teeth, whatever else, but when you're going to be intimate, then the smell is going to come out. When the smell is going to come out, the next person is going to feel affected. And that is an intimate relationship. The intimate relationship needs to be quite pure, quite clean. For that thing to materialize, and for that thing to be going well, then you need a clean atmosphere, a clean person. Thing must be clean at that time. And if there's dirt, there's smells coming out, there's filth all around, then you don't appreciate that. Imagine if it was the time that you are intimate and she just had to sneeze or something and all the dirt just went out of her nose. And then she had to throw up, all the vomit went over all of her clothes, right? What would happen? At the same time she had to break in. So when something happens, this idea, the whole room has been fumigated, right? The whole room is fumigated, all the dirt from the nose can come out, she vomited at the same time. Now, will you have any feelings at that time? The feelings will be all broken down. So you cannot say, it's just my prerogative, I need to do these things here. You can't think from a single dimension only. Just think from the other dimension, alright. Like, I would like a clean atmosphere, something perfumed, something smelling well. Then they would like the same thing. I would appreciate it, they would appreciate it. Right? So when you're thinking in that way, then you don't cause accidents and you don't cause problems. You're coming to the masjid, for example, and you thought to yourself, you know what, I must get the first takbir with the imam because of the sawab. That 40 years, 40 days if you get it, then you get two certificates, one from Jahannam and one from Nifaq. Both you will be free of. So you rush to the masjid and you parked your car incorrectly, right? And you got the takbir ula. But you only thought one single dimension. Because of your thinking one single dimension, there may have been a doctor in the masjid and he was on call, right? And he had been called up by the hospital that there is a patient. You need to attend to him urgently. Now he wants to go out, but you jammed the whole driveway, you jammed up. Now the doctor can't go. He can't attend to that urgent work, that emergency he couldn't attend. Perhaps it caused the life of that patient. Maybe someone's father, someone's mother. And the doctor couldn't come up on time. Why you couldn't come up on time? Because of your miscalculation, your inconsideration, your single thought, single dimensional thought. But you thought in different ways, right? You know what, this is a public parking lot, and I have a right, others have a right, and I could have an emergency, people could, others also could have an emergency. So let me see, I park correctly, so that if there is an emergency, and a person has to pull out, you can pull out with ease. So when you're thinking double dimension, you think from different dimensions, that you don't have a problem, you don't have a confusion. Now you are a pleasure for others, and others are a pleasure for you. You're going to the masjid, or any public area, any venue, within your home also you are finding a pleasure, you're finding comfort, you're finding respect and understanding. Within your home, in a public area, in a private area, in any area that you're going, but there is a pleasure. Because you're not just thinking one way. See, you know, the person that is just thinking one way, what type of problems he can create for himself, he creates problems for others as well. I mean, these may be small little things. But really, this is all coming from the hadith. Rasulullah, when he would come to his home, if it was a late part of the night, then he wouldn't make a noise. He would come very gently. And the sunnah is when you're entering the home, you greet. So he will practice the sunnah as well, he will greet. But he will greet in such a way, if someone is awake, then he is able to hear and answer. But if someone is asleep, his sleep is not disturbed in the least. See the consideration. The one that is awake, that person will hear the salam and he will answer the salam. The one is asleep, his sleep is not disturbed in the least. Now this can only be possible when a person is comprehensive. He is complete, comprehensive. Some child passes away and Rasulullah is tearing. He is tearing. Now, if you look at it from one single dimension, they'll say, hey, what is the need to cry on this occasion? It's a child, a Muslim child that has died. Inshallah, by the will of Allah Ta'ala, he's going to Jannat. So when he's going to Jannat and he's freed, he's saved himself, against the trials and the fitnas of the time. He's saved everything and inshallah, he's got a free ticket to Jannat. So if you're thinking of it single dimension, then you're going to celebrate. Hey, what a great moment. What a lucky. He's got a jackpot. This child is got a jackpot. Single dimension. You're thinking about it and you're celebrating. You are rejoicing at this person's death. But if you think of it from different dimensions, then you will feel no. On the one dimension, it is a great occasion. Perhaps, inshallah, we cannot say absolutely clearly that he's going to Jannat. But inshallah, we hope and we long that this child will go to Jannat. But by the same token, he's got families and folks. He's got brothers, he's got sisters, he's got parents, and he's got siblings, etc. So they are bereaved at this occasion. They are grieved at this occasion. When they are grieved at this occasion, if I'm going to celebrate and I'm going to rejoice, then it will add pain to them. See, that we are suffering a loss. We are going through a hard patch. And you are celebrating. You are rejoicing at our calamity. So if you think from different dimensions, what will happen? No, you'll understand how to place yourself, how to conduct yourself. Okay? I need to, within my heart, I need to be happy for this child here, inshallah, he saved himself from all the calamities and trials of life, and he's moved on. But I need to be respectful and considerate towards the family of the bereaved, the family of the deceased. I need to be considerate and kind towards them. That would require that I show some sympathies, some feelings, that I also sympathize for this loss of you people. I'm not thinking from just one dimension, I'm thinking from the other dimension as well, that if it is a happy, rejoicing occasion, it's also an occasion to sympathize with the family of the deceased. So I sympathize, maybe I shed a tear or two, I show some grief, and I show the loss, the pain of the loss, I show all that. So that family also feels, no, mashallah, he is sympathizing with us. He is our well-wisher. He is our well-wisher. So on the one end, you have fulfilled the right of Allah Ta'ala. From your heart, you have fulfilled Allah Ta'ala's right. And with your tongue, you have fulfilled the right of people. The rights of people have been fulfilled and respected. The right of Allah Ta'ala has been also respected. You weren't just thinking from one narrow dimension. you thought from it, you thought about the whole thing holistically and comprehensively. So when you think like this, then you are a comfort, you are a pleasure, you are a joy for everybody. See, what happens with people generally is their minds are single track. One track. They just go one single track. They don't look right, they don't look left. Right? Now, that's not the right way of doing things. Especially when you are living amongst people. One is you're living on your own, all by your own. You don't have a child, you don't have a wife, you don't have anybody, nobody. Then it's a different thing totally. You're living in a cave, all by yourself. You're living. It's a different thing. You don't have to answer to anybody. You're not answerable to anybody. But when you're living amongst people, then you have to be considerate. Now you're leaving your home, for example, at an early part of the morning. Say, people normally get up, right, at about 6 o'clock, right? So there was an emergency, there was some need, and you had to leave your home at about, say, 4 o'clock. And you have to pick up your friend on the road. So you get out of your home, on the road, en route, you have to get up, pick up your friend. And now you hoot loudly for 1-2 minutes. Now, won't it be a disturbance to the neighborhood? There may be someone that is asleep. It's possible that someone has got a cardiac problem, heart problem. And you are hooting at that time. Is it a nuisance to him? Is it inconvenience to him or not? It is inconvenience to him. It's a problem to him. But no, you were not considerate. You were only considerate about yourself. You didn't consider your friend. He may be resting at that time. It may be that he's got a heart problem. He wants calmness. He wants total quiet. But you were not considerate. As a result, you brought the cleave to this person here. So this is not the essence of Islam. It's not the essence of ibadat. Even though you're intending ibadat, even though you're intending righteousness, you cannot just get away saying, no, my intentions were right. No. Intentions is one thing, and the one Allah has given everybody, reasoning, has given him a power of reasoning, power of rationale, logic. So that was not just for waste. Why did he give you reasoning? just to entertain yourself. Why did Allah give reasoning? Why did he give brains? There will be reason now. Alright, this situation here, if I'm going to do this, it's going to cause pain to this person here. If I'm going to do this, it's going to cause some taklif to that person. What must I do? So you will now be very considerate. You will be calculated in your moves. When you're calculated in your moves, you're thinking carefully, then there's no problem. You've got wife and children, for example, right? And you've got a budget. You've got a salary now, 10,000, for example, for the month. You've got 10,000. Now, you're not calculating, you're not economizing, you're not thinking about it. So it's not 10,000, and there's a charitable cause. And, you know, so-and-so sahabi, when there was a charitable cause, he brought all his wealth and he gave it away. You know? So I want to emulate the sahabi, and I want to give all my wealth away. Right? Now you gave all that wealth away. The next day, the wife is crying. Where's the bread? Where's the food? The electricity, the light, the water, the rental, we need money for all this. The child needs to go to school, he needs to have some fee, he needs to go to school, he needs transport money, etc. So where's the money for this? Say, no, you're only worried about dunya, you're not worried about the akhirat. You know, so important things are going on in this world here. So you see, you're not being realistic. When you're not realistic, then you're going to cause problems. So the wife can say, alright, so you're so interested in that, so then leave me alone. You can carry on your work. Now you're not prepared to do that. Are you prepared to separate her? If you were so interested, right, then you would have been interested in your wife as well because you're so interested. But now, where it suits you, that you want your wife. Where it suits you, you want to spend on deen. See, it becomes a thing of convenience. It's not realistic. You're not being real to the situation. If there was a sahabi that did this, then he had been considerate to his wife and children and all that, then he did this. Or his wife and children also were at the same level as himself. They also found it difficult with money. They found themselves relieved and happy, comfortable without that wealth. So you understand the context and then you do it. You don't do things without understanding context. So we are talking about this incident of Hazrat Ilyas Sahab, I branched off, you know. to show you what is difference of opinion. And then these differences, why they do occur? They do occur because the person is single thinking, single dimension, one dimension. He doesn't think from a different dimensions. When he thinks broadly, he thinks like this, then he's respectful, he's considerate, right? He is lovable and he shows respect. He's lovable, people love him. And he shows respect, so all around, there's comfort around with him. And if he is not thinking like this, then he is not lovable. And nor is he respected, because you know, move away from this person here. He can cause a problem just now. If there was a statement to make, you are very careful, calculate how you're making that statement. Is this the statement to make at this occasion or not? You will be very, very careful. You will be very careful. How should you use yourself at that time? It may be one statement that will incite problems. Right? Alright, you saw, for example, this person here, he had been giving the children a lift, right? So he left them at the corner and said, now you walk to your home. So from the point that he had stopped to the house, maybe say 100 and 200 meters, right? So you didn't like this. You felt that the better thing would have been that he drops them right at the entrance of the house, whereas the man had left them at 200 meters before their home. Thinking that it's not a train smash, not a big thing, they can take a cool cruise and they can come home. So now you picked up the phone, so now I saw, you know what, I saw so-and-so giving your children a lift, and he left them 200 meters away from your home. What if some car came and knocked these children, this little, and what would have caused this person here, if he had just dropped them near your home? Is he so mean now that he's trying to save his petrol? He doesn't want to take the trouble to leave your children at that point. Okay? Now, the statement that you made was right. But now what does he do? It incites trouble. Discord. See, the statement that you made may have been right. But what is the consequence of the statement that you made? The consequence now that you're going to cause trouble between the both. And if you really felt like that, you felt, no, that was not the right thing, not the better thing, then you could have done two things. One thing you could have done is, when you saw them drop so far away, you could have offered them the lift and taken them to the home. That's the one thing you could have done. Or, for the future, you could have given the lift, managed dropping them far away from the home. So you said, no, you don't take the trouble, let me offer myself. So our problem is, you know, we don't do a thing and someone else is doing it. If he's doing it three-quarter or half, then we can't see him doing it as well. But we can't do it ourselves. Another person is doing it, then we can't compliment him, we can't appreciate him, but we want to criticize. See this criticizing. That Qari Tayyib Sahib Rahman used to say that in a madrasa context, right, what is the most difficult work? He says there's about four levels of work. The most difficult work is the work of a mufti. This is Qari Tayyib Sahib saying. See, because the mufti doesn't only need to know his kitab. He needs to know the context. He needs to know the individual that he's speaking to. Right? He needs to know the application. He needs to know how to word it. So many things he has to consider before he issues a statement as a fatwa. Right? So his work is most complicated. Then, at the second level, the teacher, his work is also difficult because the teacher cannot produce, he cannot give out, he cannot deliver if he hadn't prepared himself the previous night. He can only do a good delivery if he's prepared himself the previous night, he's prepared, he's made mutala of whatever he needs to teach, he's prepared that now he will do the delivery correctly. So the second level is of the teacher. And the third level is of that wise person is giving bayan. So the bayan giving, outwardly it seems difficult, right? But all that is required in that bayan giving is you have to learn about 50-60 bayans, right? And once you have learned 50-60 bayans, then you can take on bayan from here. From here you take it, push it on that side, that bayan you push it this side, half from here, quarter from this side, mix it up. One bayan you can retreat in four different masjids in over a span of a month. So that is even easier. So the most difficult work is the mufti. Then at the second level, then it is the teacher. Then at the third level, then it is of the wise. Even the modest work is also difficult, because modest is a straightforward thing. This is how it works. See how it works, and you're giving it accordingly. So that's not a difficult, complicated work. Comparatively, it's not a difficult work. Never more used to say that two classes of people really had been an asset to the community. One was the Sufi, and the second was the Mufti. Both were an asset, because the net outcome of a madrasa is fatwa, right? When the net outcome, someone may ask you, "Mona, I Maghrib namaz, I read 4 rakats. Or, I think the Imam Sahib, he broke his wuzu. What's the hukam? Or he read this ayat in place of that ayat." He'll ask you that, right? But very seldom, you're living here, I'm living now in Springer Beach over 40 years now. Nobody came and asked me, Amin bil Jahar. Nobody came and asked me, Rafa Yadeh. Nobody came and asked. This hadith is sahih or zaif, nobody came and asked. But definitely, this time of Mastamora, he's supposed to read like this, he read it like this. So the net outcome of a madrasa is fatwa. They'll ask you, whatever mulana you are, but they will definitely ask you, that this masla, how does it go, how does it work? They will definitely ask you. So that's the third level. The first level, second level, and then the third level. Third level is that wise, his work is about the easiest. Although Qari Sahib, rahmatullahi, most of his life he's given bayan. He's known for his bayans. But he says himself that that's the easiest thing. That's, because he doesn't require so much of mutala and preparation. So that's the third level. And the fourth level is the easiest level. Easiest level. He says the fourth level is the level of criticism. Because to criticize, you don't have to be sahib fun. You don't have to be a professional person. You need to be unprofessional to criticize. Right? You need to be unprofessional to criticize. Not to be, you don't need to be professional, you need to be unprofessional. Because now, all you need to do is say, why is this like this, not like this. Right? So for you to say, why is this like this, you said, now you read Zohar Namaz, right? 4 rakats. Why is Zohar Namaz 4 rakats, right? So did you need to be a professional person to make that type of question? So you need to be unprofessional to criticize. So that's the easiest work, to criticize, to run down. But to make things work, that's difficult. You have to come and perform the namaz on time, right? You have to run a madrasa, you have to run a class. So you have to make things happen, you have to run your business. To make your things happen, it's so much of difficulty. But to run them down, is it difficult? No, it's very easy. Oh, why are you coming here? Open your shop at 9 o'clock? You should have opened at 7 o'clock. Or why are you closing at 5 o'clock? No, you'll make better business if you open up at 9 o'clock at night. So for to criticize is easy. You don't need to be a professional person. You don't need to be educated. You don't need to go into kitabs and all that. Just take out any question and you just level it at that person. All the bojh, all the wazan, and all the weight goes on to who? On the one that is questioning or the one that is answering? The one that is answering, or the whole, that whole bojh, that whole weight, burden shifts on from you onto him. You in answering position is difficult. In the questioning position, you just have to ask why. Why is this like this? And why is not like that? So it's so easy. But on the answering position, that is the most difficult thing. So you see this criticism. It sounds very good. Criticism, running down. But then the consequence of it sows discord. You can incite, you can cause problems. You won't make things work. You'll break things, not make things work. So what we are talking about today is there will be differences, and in the differences we need to live within our parameters. When we live within our parameters, then there is going to be respect all around. You'll appreciate, you'll love, and you will be lovable and you will be respected. But the moment you move beyond your parameters, then you will be disliked and you will be disrespected. Allah Ta'ala grant us all tawfiq.